I'm John Krall. Coming up on No Limits, we're going to talk about how attractive Indianapolis is, or has become, as a convention site and a travel destination. For a long time, magazine writers doing pieces on Indianapolis used the same story, probably apocryphal, about the flight attendant who instructed passengers upon landing in Indianapolis to set their watches back either 1 hour or 25 years, whichever they preferred. We'll talk about how the Circle City has moved past those days with a great panel of guests. Chris Gall of Visit Indy, Indianapolis-based travel writer Helen O'Gwynn, and Betsa Marsh, president of the Society of American Travel Writers. Please join the conversation by calling 1-866-476-3881, emailing nolimits at WFYI.org, or sending a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Now, the day's news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking today about travel to Indy, and the hook for this is that a bunch of travel writers are coming to Indianapolis. The Society of American Travel Writers is having its convention here in just a few days. We're fortunate to have as our guests Chris Gall of Visit Indy. Chris, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me on, John.
It's good to have you here. Helen O'Gwynn, who is an Indianapolis-based travel writer. Helen, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much, John.
Certainly glad to have you here. And calling in by phone is Betsa Marsh, who is the president of the Society of American Travel Writers. Betsa, welcome to the program. Betsa, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much, John.
Oh, certainly. Certainly. Well, I want to talk a little bit, and I would invite our listeners to join this conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. I'd like to start a little bit since, the premise for doing this and what gave us what we call in the business the news hook for doing this is the fact that the Society of American Travel Writers is coming to Indy. Betsa, could you talk a little bit as the president about what the Society of American Travel Writers is and what it does?
Sure. We're a group of about 1,070 members from Canada, U.S., and a couple of people sprinkled in Mexico, Paris, Switzerland, basically in North America, concentrating on travel from every possible angle and every possible platform. We have bloggers and we have videographers and photographers, writers, editors, and also we partner within our organization with the people who also represent great destinations and do public relations, the public relations professionals. So we kind of get together every year in great places to see what's new. Of course, journalists always know what's new, want to know what's new, what's new. We drive our PR friends crazy with that. But we want to know what's new with where are people going, where are the trends, where are you seeing shifts in interest. So it's a credentialed organization, what makes us a little different from some other kinds, because it has a very high membership bar. These are published people who have to have a certain amount of publications, and we do a point system. So it's a credentialed organization.
How many people will be coming for the convention?
We have about 250 coming to this particular one.
That's a good turnout. I'm going to turn it to Chris Gall right now and ask, what is the significance of having a convention like this for the city?
Well, this is huge. When you look at 2012, John, three major marketing initiatives the city of Indianapolis is engaging from a tourism perspective. One, making sure we capitalize on the Super Bowl. Check. Two, we've rolled out a new brand, the way we're articulating and positioning the destination for visitors. Check. Mm-hmm. And the third is hosting the Society of American Travel Writers. So this is something we bid to host this in 2010, and since that point, we've been preparing to host these 250 journalists, and the city hosts more than 500 conventions a year, stemming from 50,000 participants to 250. And it's not necessarily the quantity, rather the quality of these visitors coming in with the power of the pen, the microphone, the camera. This will be unquestionably a huge coup for Indianapolis when you look at marketing the city for travel and tourism.
Helen O'Gwynn, I'll ask, what is the benefit of a convention like this for you as a working travel writer?
For me, this particular one is a little different because I do know the destination pretty well. For me, in a way, that's a bonus. But when you come to these conventions, you get to network with other travel writers and editors and people in the business, and you also learn a huge amount about the destination you're in. And that, I think, is what's going to be a huge benefit for Indy this time around.
Well, and that's really what I want to talk about. Sort of the premise of the show here is that, you know, Indianapolis has become much more visible, much more attractive as a convention site, as a travel destination. I'd like to talk a little bit about what's changed there, because as I say, it was a cliche for a long time. I remember, you know, in the 80s, you'd read magazine pieces and they'd make the jokes about India, no place, and, you know, the set your watch back either 5 minutes or 25 years, the thing I did in the intro. You don't hear that anymore. What changed? And I'll start with Chris Gall on that one.
Well, I think it was in the 30s under Senator Lugar, then Mayor Lugar, who had the foresight to sit down with city visionaries to say, what's next and how do we take Naptown further? And so certainly when the ball kicked off there for the Super Bowl 46, that was a crowning moment of a 30-year history of trying to get this city moving forward. But it's a nice mix of elected officials, nonprofit, philanthropists. It's a nice mix of physical infrastructure that's come online, a lot of hard work by a lot of volunteers, etc. But, you know, independent restaurants, you have boutique hotels, you have things like the Cultural Trail, adding to the vibrancy of this, what used to be flyover Midwest city.
And Betsa Marsh, I'll say, what made the city attractive to the Society of American Travel Writers as a convention site? Why did you look to the city?
I think we have a sort of an unwritten rule that we try to bring the conference back to North America about every 3 years or something like that. We've been sort of more exotic places, as in distance-wise. Mm-hmm. For last year was New Zealand. Before that was Germany. It was way time to bring it home. And we don't go to the heartland as much as we could. And because I'm in Cincinnati, I'm definitely in that flyover zone that Chris just mentioned. So we know how we are sometimes perceived. And I think part of the fun for me is going to be watching people coming from Canada and all different parts of the U.S. to see this town that has changed so much. Of course, I've been coming to Indianapolis for a long time. We're neighbors. Mm-hmm. But I think it's going to be real interesting for them to understand what now the 12th largest city in America looks like and feels like, and to just be able to fall out of their hotel room and go to take a gondola ride or to bike or do whatever, because it's that beautiful fluidity of the whole area in the White River Park area from the zoo on, and that's part of one of the things that we're going to do one night is have a progressive dinner there. But I think that's going to surprise people no end. And then as we take all our little day tours and explore, I think people are just going to be stunned.
Where do you plan to take people? Well, I hear you talk about the day tours.
Oh, it's great. The half-day tours are sort of staying in close, a little bit closer to town, and then on the day tours, we're everywhere. We're doing like the Power of Chocolate, and that's local, and then ending up with chocolate massages. People are going to wineries. They're going to breweries, farm to table. Some people
sounds
going,
like my kind of trip.
I know. You need to come on board. We're going, obviously, to Columbus, Indiana for the architecture. Those who write about architecture, I think if they have never been there, the first time you go, it's so overwhelming. Even no matter how much you read about it, you just don't get it until you're there. And then, of course, Bloomington for the Tibet experience. Mm-hmm. I'm personally going to Vera Bradley. I hear a pilgrimage for myself there. Mm-hmm. So that's what I'm doing.
Chris Call.
John, we were committed to overturning stones and hidden gems and off-the-guidebook places for these sought-after journalists and destination public relations professionals to explore. So to Betsa's point, independent restaurants and things like the Indianapolis Arts Center, they'll don helmets and get on bikes to take to the Cultural Trail with Brian Payne, the trail's visionary, plugging in with James Beard Award-winning chefs. It's really all things independent Indianapolis, and then some of your time-tested favorites like the Children's Museum. I mean, who would think that the world's largest children's museum is in Indianapolis, Indiana? And you know, the original Love Sculpture is at the Museum of Art, where we'll gather and have an event. So we're really committed to showcasing independent and Indianapolis original items and places and food while these travel writers are here, because we know they need that and they want to write about that and uncover those hidden gems.
We are talking about traveling to Indy here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Helen O'Gwen, I'm going to say, as an Indianapolis-based travel writer, what parts of this city would you show people? What would you find the most interesting and the most overlooked?
Well, I often take people on tours of the city. Years ago, along with Betsy Sheldon, actually wrote a guidebook to Indianapolis. Mm-hmm. Today, I love Mass Avenue, for instance. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite sites also is the Indiana War Memorial. If you take people up to the very top floor of that beautiful blue room, mm-hmm. the White River State Park and the Segway rides. I am forever dragging friends down there and going, let's go take a Segway ride. And if that's not your speed, you can see it by boat as well. So there are a load of sites around the city, the art museum, of course, that I love to take people.
What is the greatest, I'm going to stay with you for a second, Helen, what is the greatest misperception about Indianapolis right now?
I think that people think that it's going to be dull. Mm-hmm. Frankly, I don't know a different way to put it. People, when I bring people into town, they are often surprised. And I've written about the city, too, and editors will come back, and they didn't know that some of these things were here, and they didn't know these things were available to do and to see here in Indianapolis.
What are the things that shock them the most when you say you write and the editors are saying, oh, come on?
Well, I think, for instance, think that the fact that we have water in Indianapolis, the canal, is a big surprise.
That the canal, and are there other things like the culture or anything?
Well, Chris mentioned the Children's Museum, and that is another big surprise. Culture, I suppose, is a surprise. Chris, you may have a take on that.
Absolutely. We just conducted focus group research this past spring, unquestionably. Culture in Indianapolis, question mark. You know, the sports, yes.
Sports, yes. Exactly.
Independent restaurants and culture, question mark. And so when we did image testing, to Helen's point, we'd show White River State Park and the canal, and people said, that's in Indianapolis? Show me more of that. Mm-hmm. So really, it's the lack of culture, and it's that misperception. But I think there's a real opportunity year-round, but also with SATW coming to town and these travel writers, is to be the underdog. Mm-hmm. And to break those stereotypes free and showcase the city other than Naptown and other than a sports-minded city.
We are talking about traveling to Indy here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. Well, we should talk a little bit, though. I mean, obviously, one of the things that kind of vaulted and changed the perception of India No Place was that focus on making this the amateur sports capital of the world. Chris Gall, how successful was that? How important has that been to the city's transformation?
Having the Pan American Games, which the city is celebrating now its 25th anniversary, and having the oldest sports commission in the nation here, the Indiana mm-hmm. Sports Corps, who does nothing but year-round attract amateur and professional sports to come to Indianapolis, has been invaluable. And it's their leadership that has built this city. And when you have the business of sports being governed here, like the NCAA, and there's an economic engine there, there's a perception change value there. And so using sports, we don't hide behind that. When we're talking mm-hmm. about the city, we don't hide behind the fact we hold the world's largest single-day sporting event. We tip our hand to that because we know to a convention, if we can host the world's largest day sporting event, the Indy 500, we can host your meeting or convention. So it's been invaluable in marketing the city as a place that you can do business and visit.
We are talking here about traveling to Indy and basically Indianapolis as a travel destination convention site here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Chris Gall of Visit Indy, Helen O'Gwen, who is an Indianapolis-based travel writer, and Betsa Marsh, who is president of the Society of American Travel Writers. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We are talking about traveling to Indy and Indy's attractiveness as a convention site, travel destination. The hook is that the Society of American Travel Writers is going to be holding a convention here in a few days. I'm fortunate to have as my guest Chris Gall, who is with Visit Indy, Helen O'Gwen, an Indianapolis-based travel writer, and Betsa Marsh, who is president of the Society of American Travel Writers. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881, or you can send us a tweet or connect with us on Facebook at WFYI. Gotten a tweet from a listener named John who says, will you, not me, but I'm presuming Betsa and Helen, will you take the travel writers to Mug and Bun, an Indy original? I'll toss that one first to Betsa and then Helen.
Oh, Chris, you can help me here. I don't know if that's on our list of adventures. I guess it's a culinary experience, right?
Yeah, you know what? It's not. It's so interesting. When we talked with event organizers like mm-hmm. Betsa and Helen, and there were so many little jewels and gems to uncover, that was one up for debate. And ultimately, there's just not enough time to showcase everything. Although we've compiled information about other independent restaurants and jewels like Mug mm-hmm. and Bun to feed to them post convention through some other marketing collateral, but that didn't make the official let's go eat there. But it's one that we debated and one that certainly is something that can be written about and talked about when you experience Indianapolis.
Where are you taking them, Chris Gall?
We're going to go to Chef JJ's backyard. Okay. We're going to be dining at our bistro, at Recess, Naked Chopsticks. We'll take them into Fountain Square. Bluebeard is a new restaurant that's come up. Santorini Greek Kitchen. The only places that these journalists coming in for the Society of American Travel Writers will eat mm-hmm. will be at independent restaurants, places you can only find in Indianapolis, Indiana. And we really are excited to showcase the culinary experience of the city and how far we've come. When you have the New York Times saying Indianapolis, where the world comes to eat, mm-hmm. we're proud to showcase that in fact is the truth.
And what are the, you know, how many, was there an application process for determining which restaurants, or was it literally a group of you sitting in a room thinking, well, that's a place I'd like to eat? Helen, you're actually smiling and shaking your head. Helen O'Gwen.
Well, I was not part of the decision-making group on this, but I do know that there were a lot of suggestions from many, many people. And I think, Chris, the ultimate decision went to you and Betsa and Marcia.
We probably had a list of 100 independent restaurants and had to whittle down for availability and number of seats and capacity and being able to bring in and whisk in and out for two different nights. We're going to take the attendees to independent restaurants. So ultimately, it was a hard decision. And we know certainly there are some great restaurants left out, but we feel really confident of where they're eating and the story behind those places, like a Shapiro's and mm-hmm. Some of these really
landmark
places, like a St. Elmo's, et cetera.
Yeah. Well, and I'd like to talk also just about, you know, when you're selecting the places to show these people in the city, and at Helen was saying actually when we were at the break that the convention itself is one thing, but a lot of the writers come in beforehand and they stay afterwards, and we'll do stories basically on Indianapolis as part of that. In terms of choosing what to present of not just Indianapolis but any of these areas, Betsa, what is that process like?
Because we're such an interesting hybrid organization at the Society of American Travel Writers, we have to always be thinking big picture. Mm-hmm. I mean, I might just want to write about my Vera Bradley experience, but, you know, I've got to worry about
it. I'm sensing a motif there, Betsy. You've got a big thing for Vera Bradley, I can tell.
You know, are the pictures going to be good? What if a videographer goes up there? What are the visuals? So every time we start planning this stuff and we've been working with Chris for more than 2.5 years, and it's been a great experience. And he has a fabulous team. I did want to give a shout-out to them because he's got Morgan Greenlee and Lisa Wallace and Jacqueline Cromley, and they've been fabulous to work with. So when we think about where do we take people, what do they do, like the people who are going to go swim with the dolphins, that's one experience they can write about. What are the videographers going to do that day? What are the photographers going to do that day? We have to think about all kinds of storytelling on every single platform. And that's something that, as you know from your experience at the School of Journalism, the platforms just get broader and broader and broader, and so who's going to be tweeting and who's going to be Facebooking and what's their access? And because we have fabulous access at the JW Marriott when we're having meetings, because we do also professional development, we don't just tour, people are going to be tweeting and stuff. So it's really big picture. Some people drill down and say, oh, I just want to, I'm here for the photos and that's all I care about. And other people want more a culinary experience, and that's all they're going to write about. But from the planning perspective, we're constantly thinking how to engage the largest number of people and the largest number of story angles.
Well, and I'll talk, I guess, Chris Gall, from your perspective, in terms of deciding what options you wanted to present to these folks. How did you go about that process, and what was the...
We had a litmus test. Is this something that could appear on the front page of a travel section of a major daily newspaper or be featured on NPR with Steve Inskeep as a destination, et cetera? And we basically boiled down and came up with probably 50 different variations of tours. And we presented those to the Society of American Travel Writers, not only those half-day and full-day tours, but also pre and post. We said we picked these dates because a guy named Tiger Woods is going to be playing golf at Crooked Stick. And you could come in early and see him play and play golf at, up in Hamilton County. And we said there's a great place, a hidden retreat called French Lick, in which you could go down and bathe in their mineral springs. And is this would this portray the destination or the state in a positive light? And could you capture it, to Betsy's point, if you're taking a photo or writing about it? Are there interesting people and places within those walls? And so that was the litmus test for us initially. And then ultimately, Betsy and her team actually had two people flew in from Los Angeles and incognito, really without holding us holding their hand, looked at all these variations like the Indiana Dunes or Columbus for Architecture, et cetera, and landed on those options that they felt were strongest. So it was an interesting process and one that was aided yet unaided through our handholding.
We are talking about India's a travel destination convention site here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. We have gotten a tweet from a listener who says Indy reads books. He said maybe our travel writer guests would like to see Indy's only downtown nonprofit used bookstore. Are there things like that on the list? I'll throw that to Chris Gall first.
Absolutely. You look at the explosion of Mass Ave down there on the East End with Best Chocolate in Town and Our Bistro and Indy Reed's new bookstore. If you haven't had a chance to step inside, it's an incredible, stunning new facility where you can buy books for cheap and have it go to a good cause. So it's again, little gems like that we're going to meander to and ramble into to make sure that the city shines. And what's interesting to me, a lot of Central Indiana residents say, well, convention tourism is what makes the most money for the city. Well, coincidentally, 63% of all the money that comes in annually for tourism is generated by leisure visitors. These are Cincinnati, Chicago, Louisville, New York, etc. The other percentage, 37%, is generated by our convention goers. And so hosting this convention helps feed ideas through the media to potential leisure visitors in New York on their couches in Chicago, listening on a morning drive somewhere in Denver to say, you know what? I've never thought about coming to Indianapolis, but now I'm going to.
And Helen O'Gwen, for these conventions, I presume, you know, so far it sounds like that the options are relatively regimented. Are there opportunities? You know, if you're a solitary, as a journalist myself, I try not to run with the pack all that often. I want to go out and find something on my own. Do you have opportunities to do that? And if so, where would you direct people if they just wanted to go off by themselves in this
well,
city?
Well, absolutely, there are opportunities to go off on your own. While there are things to do during the entire length of the convention, you can also say, I'm not signing up for anything. I want to go on my own. And you could contact Chris or Morgan or somebody at Visit Indy, and they would help you arrange that. Or you can just get on the Internet and explore and say, all right, I want to go to West Lafayette and see what Purdue University and that campus and that area looks like, because I don't believe West Lafayette's on the agenda But there are certainly sites out and around the state. There are too many wonderful places to go in Indiana to be possibly covered in a convention like this.
Well, that's something we should emphasize, is that even though the convention's coming to Indianapolis, it sounds like the object here is really more to showcase the state rather than the city. Is that true, Chris Gall?
Absolutely. You know, we worked in partnership with the Indiana Office of Tourism Development from a state perspective, and delegates will head up north again to Indiana Dunes and cruise along and sail along Lake Michigan. They'll be down in Brown County, retreating to Nashville and seeing the quaintness of that area. New Harmony, this utopian society, is an option to go explore. Turkey Run, Shades Park. We'll be taking them down to Columbus for architecture. So it's not just focused on Indianapolis, rather the state as a whole. And we thought, and we were very adamant to lure this convention here, we had to showcase other than Indianapolis what's happening within the state. And it's been intriguing to see where people gravitate.
Helena,
and I was going to add, and Betsa can probably add more to this, but it is so important as a travel writer, when you're deciding whether or not to come to these conventions, not everybody goes. Well, maybe some people go every year, but I don't know many who do. You take a look at not only where the core convention is going to be and what the offerings are there in terms of professional development and learning about a destination, but you look at the things that are going to be added on. What other parts of that area that you'll be able to see?
Can I get a story out of
this
decision?
Can I get a story out of it? Exactly. Can I get photos out of it? What can I get out of it? And Betsa, I'll bet you have more to add on that.
Well, one thing I did want to mention, thank you, Helen, was for every day that we're touring, there is an on-your-own option, as Helen said, that you can just say no, and then Chris has arranged for free bike rental for other things for the downtown the bike hub. And then I think this is the first time in SATW history, and we're 57 years old, everybody says they want free time, and by the time the agenda gets done, there's no free time. We actually have saved the last afternoon of free time. And I don't know whether people will appreciate how rare that is, but in most conferences, you actually get nothing. You get the time between you drop your things in your hotel room and you head out. But this afternoon, and because people will have free passes to all the museums, and they'll be able to explore on their own, and they can go wander and just have a great adventure. So we did save them that time because the way we are situated at the JW Marriott, we are absolutely in the core, and the walking is perfect. So that's why we wanted to save that time for people.
Chris Gall, what would you say is the best-kept secret in this city? I mean, if you've got that afternoon, and it's not something that's already on your agenda, something that didn't make the list, or something that is just kind of a hidden gem that people don't think about?
Yeah, that's a great question. I really firmly believe that the Indianapolis Cultural Trail, you know, a lot of these trails take you to the seaside or to the mountainside. This is an urban trail, and a Project for Public Spaces has named this something a city has done that other cities should look to as keep your eye on the ball. I mean, we've had Paris, France, and Portland come in to say, how in the world did you get rid of a lane of vehicular traffic and replace it with this culturally minded trail? And I really firmly believe if you get on your bike downtown Indianapolis and you go down the east side of Mass Ave and connect with the Mona on into Broad Ripple, that time to yourself biking, and then getting into Broad Ripple for some fine dining and or a cold beer, and maybe you stumble into Plump's last shot, Bobby Plump, who hit the game-winning shot that inspired the movie Hoosiers, or you might meander in a corner wine bar or take in some live jazz. It's that trail into Broad Ripple that I think people oftentimes overlook, and it's just a cool part of the city.
How much of the city and the state's history will be emphasized as part of this? I'll stay with you, Chris.
There's a tour, General Stuart Goodwin, Monuments and Memorials Commission downtown. We have a tour dedicated to all of our monuments and memorials that is focused on LaFont and Ralston and their design of D.C., and then Ralston coming to Indianapolis and designing Indianapolis like D.C., and you're going to see all the monuments, memorials, and learn about our statehood and the state capital. So there's definitely a piece of history that we wanted to tell.
We are talking about Indy as a travel destination and convention site here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Colt, welcome to the program.
Hi. I was wondering if in the planning of this, because I hear about the culinary side of things and Indiana this is great for culinary, but we as a city just took over the largest breweries city. We just beat out Portland. I didn't know if the people planning this had taken that into consideration for something that could be pursued and stories could be written about.
Thanks very much for the call and the question. We'll get an answer for you, Colt. Well, I'll throw that first to Chris Gall and then Betsa Marsh.
Sure, we've got you covered. The emerging craft beer scene isn't just in coastal cities. It's here in Indianapolis, and we're proud, like Sun King and Upland and certainly other breweries here, Flat 12. We're having a tour just about our craft beer scene. And we'll arm you with water in one hand and beer in the other, and you'll go experience this emerging, bolstered craft beer scene that's award-winning and winning gold medals. And so that was definitely a story we wanted to tell and something on the experience book.
I'll just ask, Betsa, I mean, how liquid is this convention?
Well, that one's called Hops a Plenty, and if you look just above it, it's called Indy Uncorked, and that's the wineries. I tell you, we have a couple of people. I'm just thinking of the guys right now, but I'm sure there are women who love beer, too. But we have a couple of guys who blog about beer wherever they are in the world, and they would be bereft if we were not thinking beer for them. And then we have people who write about wine, and so when we have these wonderful wineries around, of course, from you mentioned the history before, mm-hmm. if anybody would tell the history of the wineries in Indiana or Ohio, there's the oldest ones in America, really, and very, very old tradition. And so that's how liquid? It's like moderate. It's not like the old days where people would pour themselves into cabs at the end of the night. No, it's not like that.
Well, and when you
Chris Gall, please.
When you pop open Travel and Leisure or Conan S. Traveler or the New York Times Sunday Travel section, food, wine, and travel go hand in hand. It's something that complements, and so we wanted to make sure that was seen here in our showcase of the city.
Well, and Betsa, I guess another way to look at that is, you know, after this event is over, how will you evaluate it and say, you know, that was a successful convention? What are the standards you use there? I mean, obviously, you want people to have a good time.
Thank you. That's a great question. We urge everybody, and that includes the people who are, of course, the active writers and photographers and also our public relations professionals, many of whom write and blog, to send all of their clips in. We have a very aggressive format for sending in your clips, and we start asking people immediately. Chris and his team will also be monitoring all the social media, so they'll be tracking all that kind of the chatter on that. And then we start keeping track for the return on investment of where did the story appear and what's the circulation, how much is the advertising page, those kinds of all the kinds of things that go into figuring out what is basically the advertising equivalent of this. You know, it's not an exact science, but there are enough guidelines at this point that we can get an idea. And for our New Zealand convention last year, we're not quite a year out, but we've hit like $1.6 million in ROI dollars, and the Germany convention was about $1.4 million, I believe, at that point, and we're still gathering clips because you know how it is when you're writing mm-hmm. for a magazine. You might not see that story for a year out, maybe mm-hmm. sometimes 2 years. So we gather clips for at least 3 years and then present them to the host, but we keep a very aggressive tally so it's not just good vibrations, it's actual trackable results.
We are talking about Indy as a convention site, travel destination here on No Limits. I'm fortunate to have as my guest Chris Gall of Visit Indy, Helen O'Gwen, who is an Indianapolis-based travel writer, and Betsa Marsh, who is president of the Society of American Travel Writers. I am John Krall. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking today about Indianapolis as a travel destination and convention site in honor of the upcoming convention of the Society of American Travel Writers. That does not flow off the tongue easily. Clearly, you are travel writers and not radio people. And I'm fortunate to have as my guest Chris Gall, who is with Visit Indy, Helen O'Gwen, who is an Indianapolis-based travel writer, and Betsa Marsh, who is president of the Society of American Travel Writers. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. Maya, welcome to the program.
Hi.
Hi.
I just wanted to say that I lived in Indianapolis all my life. I'm only 19, but I've always hated it for some reason. I thought it was always just boring. It was not compared to, you know, Chicago or New York. And I think my turnaround was basically when I went to look at the Super Bowl stuff. And I think after the Super Bowl, I kind of came to a realization that, you know, we actually have something, you know, here to offer to people that, you know, I remember, you know, Gen Con and, you know, all these marching band, and that we have, you know, actually something to, you know, offer to the world. And basically I have another question is, are you guys going to go to Connor Prairie? I know that I'm based in for Indiana history.
Thanks very much for the call, Maya. We'll get you an answer. Well, I'll start with you, Chris Gall.
Absolutely. Connor Prairie is on the agenda. In fact, if anyone listening has ever done their Follow the North Star, very powerful program about becoming a fugitive slave on the Underground Railroad during Connor Prairie days. And so we're going to take a group up there. And then they're also visit the Civil War exhibit that's relatively new. So Connor Prairie is a definite must, and one that if you're a Smithsonian affiliate in the state of Indiana, we know that travel writers will gravitate towards that. So we're very proud to have Connor Prairie partnering and offering a half-day tour up there a little north of the city.
Well, and Helen O'Gwen, I'm going to sort of take Maya's question and repurpose it ever so slightly, at least the jump off her call, where she talked about the perception of having grown up here that it's not an exciting place. How much of that is, do events like the Super Bowl change not just the perceptions of the outside world, but also the perceptions of the people who live here? Is it important in that perspective?
I think it is important in that perspective. Once people see Indianapolis, they discover that we have a lot of benefits that you might not find in other cities. For starts, Chris started talking about the design of our city. We have a fabulous center of town. We have Monument Circle. And when you are from another city, you won't necessarily have a hub like that or a wonderful spot like that that is a starting point for visiting any city. And I think that Indianapolis does have a number of benefits. We're an easy-to-visit city, highly walkable, and you can change people's perception when you bring them into town, as we did with the Super Bowl. And I know that many of the comments we heard about the Super Bowl was that it was so great because you could walk to everything you wanted to do.
Chris Gall, you look like you were about to say something.
There's no coincidence that we put our heads together to bid to host the Society of American Travel Writers in the same year we were hosting the Super Bowl. That was very deliberate. We wanted to have the wave of promotion and civic pride oozing and all the abnormal amount of media exposure internationally happening in February, wait a few months, and then have this flux of media come to talk about travel. And that was very deliberate and very calculated so that this wave would continue in 2012. And hopefully in 10 years when we look back, it's the Super Bowl and things like SATW that further progress the city.
Or the catalyst, as it were. We are talking about Indianapolis and Indiana as a travel destination and convention site here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. We have gotten a suggestion for an Indiana tourist attraction from a listener named Lenore. It says, please tell the travel writers coming to Indianapolis about the Kokomo Opalescent Glass Company, which is America's oldest art glass company. Having produced glass for the Tiffany Company in the past, there are wonderful tours to see the manufacture of art sheet glass the same way it was made more than a century ago. In addition, you will see our glassblowers at work making anything from brown glass rondelles to exclusive one-of-a-kind blown glass paperweights and vases. Helen O'Gwen, you are smiling big time.
Well, I also wrote a book called Day Trips from Indianapolis,
yes.
And that place is in my Day Trips book. I've been to that spot. It's a wonderful destination, and there are many other spots in Indiana like that. Vera Bradley, as Betsa noted, where
definitely
in Indiana,
sensing a motif here.
We're We're making things, not just beer and wine, but we are actually making items, and you can go in and see those being made. The chocolate tour that is going to be on this is another example of that.
We are talking about India as a travel destination site here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. Rev, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I have five quick suggestions on best-kept secrets of Indianapolis. I'm new to the city, and I searched all these out. The Idle York Museum right there next to the JW. The American Medical History Museum on West Vermont Street with its famous lecture autopsy hall original. John Zwara, who was a resident there. The American Van Gogh, his pictures are in-house. The Studio 2000 on the circle where the lady politicians go to get your hair done with its two holes in the floor of historical value. The MLK RFK 6th and Broadway Park where RFK gave that famous lecture after the assassination of Dr. King in 1968. There's a film that your guests should see. And, of course, next week on the 5th and 6th, the Indians – our AAA team right there on the by the JW have their playoffs. And if you mention the name of Rev, in addition to only paying $10, as little as $10 for the ticket to get in, they will only charge you $1 for the hot dogs and the chips and the Cracker Jacks. Over and out. Thank you.
Oh, thanks very much for the call, Rev.
Well, I like Rev.
That was a lot of information in a hurry there. But how much of that, Betsa Marsh, I will throw this one to you. Is that one of the cool byproducts of having a convention like this, is that you get people like that calling up with these ideas that perhaps you considered, perhaps you hadn't?
Relatively new, so he's been doing his homework, and that's really exciting. And actually, I have been to the Studio 2000 with that fabulous Art Deco stuff. That is way cool. I've been to the American Medical History thing. That is a bizarro land, and that's fascinating. And also, your earlier caller who mentioned the Connor Prairie, I've done that fugitive experience, and you know that's something that is very hard to describe to people because it's so absolutely personal. And I'm trying to explain, well, if you don't want to be part of the thing, you can put the headband on and become invisible, and they're looking at me like I have two heads. And I say, you just got to go, because once you cross that one line, it's 1836, and you are vulnerable. You are a fugitive. And it's really, it can be really terrifying. It's very moving. And I didn't fare very well, I'll just tell you that, in my experience. But it was great, because they'll pick on certain people. And but it's a fabulous experience, and I love Connor Prairie.
Did Chris Gall?
I was going to mention that what I liked about the last caller, his enthusiasm, is although the company I represent, Visit Indy, we're the official tourism ambassadors, each of us in Central Indiana are a tourism ambassador. And when our friends and family come from coastal cities far and wide, we fall into that same hospitable ambassador. And so that enthusiasm, when Helen has or you have, John, friends and family come, you turn over those gems and take them out as a tourism ambassador. And that's what makes Indianapolis so cool and so unique, is that we breed this authentic enthusiasm for the city and ooze this civic pride and Hoosier hospitality. And that really is felt and is palpable when a visitor comes.
Well, and that actually prompts a question. I mean, you do this obviously for a living, and it's sort of the way you occupy a major portion of your week. When you are off the clock and a friend or a family member has come into the city, where do you take them?
Well, that's interesting. Because I kind of feel always on the clock. I know that doesn't always make my wife happy, but you know, I always gravitate to White River State Park. I always gravitate to the Museum of Art. I gravitate to those independent restaurants that you can't find anywhere else, because I want to support them personally, along with professionally, to make sure the city keeps moving forward.
We've gotten an email question from a listener named Janine, who says, it's more a comment or suggestion, hope they are planning to make a trip to Vincennes. Lots of history around there, oldest city in Indiana. Betsa, is there a trip to Vincennes planned?
You know, I don't believe so, and Chris can correct me. I know there's a lot of William Henry Harrison history there, right?
Mm-hmm. George Rogers Clark, all of
yeah,
all of that
there's
sort of
there's
stuff.
Tons. I don't think our day trips go out there. It was the same thing as Chris spoke to earlier about how we spread the net really, really wide, and then we had to reel it in a little bit. So I don't think Vincennes made it, Chris, did it? But I know that that's a great area.
Chris Call.
It didn't. I wish it could have. Again, I think it's time. There's only so many hours and so many days when you feed in the tours, but then also, as Betsy pointed out, the professional development, the workshops, and the continuing education. But it was certainly one that we debated heavily.
What was the biggest heartbreak, the one that, you know, the one you had to drop off the list that you really, you wish that it was, the envelope could be just a little bit bigger? Chris Call.
Boy, you know, Southern Indiana as a whole has so many unique places along the river there. Clifty Falls was something we had debated taking people to and retreating for a few days. That really comes top of mind. We were just, you know, when you look at taking them to the dunes, Mount Baldy and Lake Michigan, and being able to take them to French Lick and these hidden mineral springs and over to New Harmony, it just ultimately so many days, so many places, but Southern Indiana is just prime for exploring.
We've gotten a question from a listener named Sharon who wants to know, is there a place where travel writers tend to live? Or are you scattered all over the place, Betsy Marsh?
Thank you. We are scattered everywhere. We have a lot of bi-coastals, of course. So our chapters that we have four geographic chapters: Eastern, Central States, Canadian, and Western. We have Western used to be our largest. Now Eastern is. So we have a lot of bi-coastals, and I think our Canadian chapter is our smallest. But we're all over the place.
Pretty much anywhere there's an airport.
Yeah, pretty much. I think you've got it.
We are talking about India as a travel destination and convention site here on No Limits. Jan, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Certainly. Your question,
please. I'm wondering if the Society of Travel Writers also has in their membership disabled travelers that write specifically about travel and accessibility.
We do. Candy. I'm trying to think of Candy. It's Candy. She writes a lot. We have a lot of that, and we have several people who blog about that. And because we have a geography outreach program called the Traveling Teddies, this is where our members link up with elementary schools from Canada and the U.S., and the Bears travel for the students. I usually pick a third grade class, and her bear, Candy's bear, is in a wheelchair. So the bear represents travelers with disabilities and special needs and those kinds of things. So I think it's a great point. We have several members who write exclusively about that. I think it's a great point. Thank you.
John, I want to add also that as a travel writer, I am fully aware of what places are accessible to the disabled. I tend to do a lot of historic writing about historic sites, and that can often be an issue there. So you, as a travel writer, you just become aware of that because it's more important to many, many Americans.
Well, and I guess that's one of the questions. You talk about the professional development workshops that are going to be part of this. How has the profession itself changed over time? I mean, the challenges that you face in terms of that. Helen is shaking her head. I'll throw this while she's in distress. I could throw this to you, Betsy, and let Helen have the last word.
It is, as we were talking about platforms before, it's changed a tremendous amount because you can just think about the number of newspaper sections for travel that we used to have, and now they've shrunk a tremendous number because of the ad base and those kinds of issues. The internet has grown exponentially. We all have so many blogs and so many things that we could read all day long. Just Google something and there you go. We have to be careful about what are the credentials of the person who's writing that and photographing that kind of thing. So when we're looking at professional development, we're trying to cover all those kinds of changes. People who've made successful blogs from ground up, people who write about multi-generational travel. We have a world-class photographer. We have many world-class photographers, but Bob Christ is certainly one of them. And he's going to do three sessions on shooting video with your digital SLR camera, those kinds of things. Those of us who are sort of married to still, we need to get into the video world. We have a lot of those kinds of things. And then for the PR professionals that we mentioned before, mm-hmm. what's beyond Facebook and what's beyond Twitter, and you know, is it food spotting? What is it going to be the next social media kind of thing? They need to be on top of that. We're also going to do a little bit about cruising. That changes every year, of course. Who's going where, and what are the new ships, and is there over, are there too many rooms, those kinds of things. So we try to be basically just ahead of that little crest of the wave if we can, and see, because we want to be able to give our members the tools so that when an editor says, oh, by the way, can you do video with us, we want to give them the power to say, oh, yeah, I can do that. Oh, sure, I learned how to do that. And even if they have to scramble for a little bit, we want to give them the power to say yes.
Well, and Helen O'Gwen, in about 20 seconds, can you tell us biggest change since you started working as a travel writer?
Online opportunities for writing and producing. And also, as Betsa mentioned, every travel writer now needs to be versed in more than one media.
This has been a fascinating show. I really would like to thank all of you for joining us today. I'd like to thank in particular Chris Gall from Visit Indy. Chris, thank you very much. I've enjoyed having you on the program.
Pleasure to be here. Honored. Thank you.
Certainly. Helen O'Gwen, who is an Indianapolis-based travel writer, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you for inviting me, John.
And Betsa Marsh, who is the president of the Society of American Travel Writers, thank you very much for joining us.
It was great fun. Thank you.
And we will be back next week when we are going to do a really, really fun show about the music scene here in Indianapolis, which I think is one you will not want to miss. I am John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Make it a good week.
No Limits is a production of WFYI Public Radio, 90.1 FM and HD1. Producer, Sharon Alsett. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producer, Jeanette Rhodes. And Board Engineer, Don Hibschweiler. We invite you to join us each Thursday at 1 p.m. for No Limits, rebroadcast at 8 p.m., and you can listen online at WFYI.org.